Good morning, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this panel. Welcome to the second day of our annual Global ESG Conference. I am Jean-Xavier Hecker, co-head of ESG and sustainability research within equity research at JP Morgan. And following the deep dive report we've published a few weeks ago around hydrogen called Separating the Opportunity from the Optimism, I am pleased to welcome Air Products for a fireside chat around sustainability, hydrogen, on the energy transition. With me today, Simon Moore, Vice President, Investor Relations, focusing on corporate relations and sustainability at Air Products. We will start this session with a short presentation about Air Products' sustainability strategy on recent hydrogen projects, and we will then be discussing it in more details in Q&A. As for the rest of the session during this conference, please feel free to ask questions via the website and or to send them to me by email to exchange and have question Q&A with Simon. Simon, thanks very much for being with us today, and the floor is yours.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, John Javier, and thank you to the rest of the JP Morgan team for putting this conference together and giving us the opportunity to join you. As we said, I'd like to provide a little bit of a quick background on Air Products, and then quickly we'll move into the perhaps more interesting Q&A session. So, obviously, on slide two, there's our forward-looking statement language. And so I'd ask you to really turn to slide four, which will provide an opportunity to create a little bit of a background for Air Products. I'll slow down. There you go. So this is a little bit of an overview of Air Products, and maybe want to just point out a few things. We are very proud of our 19,000 employees around the world who work very hard every day, and particularly over the challenges in the last year during COVID, both personal challenges for people and then their commitment to keeping our plants running and keeping our customers supplied with essential products to support industry during this difficult time. You'll see Air Products is a very international company, over 60% of our sales outside the US, 50 countries, 750 production facilities, and that's why we call ourselves a global company with a local presence. The vast majority of our products and plants are very local in their production. We're not distributing the product over a very broad area, and so we do not import or export very many products. Perhaps we could turn to slide five and we'll talk a little bit about our business. So we're going to choose to describe our business through the lens of the supply mode or the business model. And I think that's important because the first one, the on-site business, is relatively unusual, let's say, in the materials, the chemicals space. And this is the business model where we would build a large plant. It could cost $50 million, $100 million, $200 million. And quite frankly, on some of our larger projects, it could cost multiple billions of dollars. But we're going to build that plant right at the customer site or right next door and sign a very long-term 15 or 20-year supply agreement to provide product to that customer. And we would not take any of the input risk, meaning the raw material price risk or availability risk, and equally as importantly, wouldn't take any of the price risk or the volume risk of the products coming out. So Air Products has about 50% of our business in the on-site model. We see that percentage growing over time. We see, you know, very large mega projects around the world driving that growth, very much supported by our sustainability initiatives and the world's focus on clean energy. And again, results in very stable cash flows, which again, as we'll talk about a little bit, supports Air Products' long-term strategy of raising the dividend every year. We also are proud of our liquid bulk and packaged gas businesses, which are what we call our merchant business, which are good businesses and tend to grow a little bit more with underlying manufacturing. And we definitely will continue to support those businesses going forward. So it's really the on-site business that's a little bit different for Air Products. Maybe we turn to slide six, please. And you can see that we're proud of the success we've had over the last 5 or 6 years. We've really been able to improve our business since our chairman and CEO, Seifi Ghasemi, joined us. Restructured the company, focused us on industrial gases. You can see the margin improvement, and now we're really very, very well positioned for tremendous growth opportunities going forward. On slide seven, I mentioned the dividend. Air Products is incredibly proud of the fact that we've raised the dividend every year for 39 years. So not only have we paid a dividend for 39 straight years, we've raised it every year for 39 years, and we have no intention of breaking that streak. And again, that's supported by the cash flow stability of the on-site business model, even in uncertain times, challenging times like we've gone through. And you can see that we announced a 12% dividend increase here a couple of months ago and would expect to pay over $1.3 billion in dividends directly to shareholders this year. Now, that's while we continue to invest a significant amount of capital in these big projects. But I think it's helpful to recognize that that capital spending is balanced with direct return to shareholders through the dividend. If we can turn to slide nine a little bit on our goal. We obviously want to continue to be the safest, most diverse, and most profitable industrial gas company in the world. That's been our goal for many years, and we want to continue to maintain that position. To complement that, on slide 10, Seifi has talked about our higher purpose. And really, this is about the excitement that we feel at Air Products, where the projects that we are part of, that we are driving, that we're creating, are really helping the world manage and solve some of its most challenging environmental and energy challenges. There's a lot of focus today and each day around improving the environmental footprint, but at the same time, the world needs more energy and it needs growth of energy. So Air Products is very, very well positioned to play a key role, and in doing that, can bring people together from different places around the world. When we do a very large project or we build a multi-billion dollar project in Saudi Arabia, we've got people working on that project from a lot of places around the world, and that allows an opportunity to bring those folks together. And on slide 11, Seifi always acknowledges that competitive advantage is not necessarily found in product or technology or patents. It really, at the end of the day, comes from the commitment and motivation of the people, and the excitement at Air Products is very, very high right now with all the opportunities in front of us. So let's talk a little bit about sustainability. On slide 13, Air Products has been proud of our sustainability accomplishments for many years. We've been publishing a sustainability report for more than a decade, and you can see some of the results here. We'll be issuing our new sustainability report in the next month or two, and that will kind of mark the end of a set of goals which had a target date of 2020. And we'll talk about some of our new goals, but you see some of our key points that we've articulated here. We obviously report on our CO2 emissions, but our business today is driven very much by our customers' desire to improve the environment. And so when we look at this, for every ton of CO2 we emit, our products help our customers save 2.5 tons of CO2 equivalent. So our business today, even in the CO2 arena, is very, very positive for the environment. And maybe just to drive that home a little bit more on slide 14, for Air Products today and for many decades in the past and into the future, sustainability and business growth have been interlinked. And these are a couple of examples. One of our biggest businesses today is supplying large quantities of hydrogen to the refining industry. Well, that hydrogen is used to clean up transportation fuels to desulfurize. So is that a sustainability opportunity? Well, of course, the answer is yes. Is that a business growth opportunity? Of course, the answer is yes. So we have many examples where a big part of Air Products' business today has been focused on the world's appetite for more and cleaner energy. And whether that be us supplying LNG equipment or oxygen and technology for oxy-fuel burners, it's been a big part of what's driving our business today. And on slide 15, really the world's focus is absolutely accelerating our growth opportunities. And I'll come back and touch on each of these in a second, but gasification, carbon capture, hydrogen for mobility are very significant growth opportunities, again, fundamentally driven by the world's appetite for more and cleaner energy. On slide 16, you can specifically see the goal that we communicated last September. Again, I mentioned our last set of sustainability goals had a target date of 2020. So we rolled out our carbon intensity goal, our third by 30. So this is to reduce our carbon intensity by a third from a baseline of 2015 with a target date of 2030. And again, we'll talk about some of the things that are going to drive this. you know, with their products, we don't have to choose between a sustainability-driven project or a business growth-driven project. They're kind of one and the same. And maybe just a comment on our choice of 2030, we wanted to be that date, the target date, to be close enough in that it was meaningful and impactful to the decisions and the people that are here today, and yet was long enough out that some of the major projects we're going to undertake will have an opportunity to influence this metric. So we're excited about this intensity goal. And on slide 17, you can see some of the key areas. Again, carbon capture projects. And I know we'll talk about these in the Q&A session. Carbon-free hydrogen, like our NEOM project. We're always very focused on our operational excellence, improving the efficiency of our facilities. And we are very excited about the opportunity to continue to increase our utilization of renewable energy. In most, that's talking about the electric power we use in our air separation plants, otherwise known as our scope 2 emissions, but there's definitely an opportunity for us to continue to increase our use of renewable energy. So let's come back to some of these areas real quickly. On slide 18, you can see carbon capture. We operate today one of the world's largest carbon capture systems. In Port Arthur, Texas, we've had a project on stream for the last 7 years or so, capturing about 1 million tons a year of CO2. We're very proud about the fact we could retrofit that to our hydrogen plant, and we've maintained very, very good operating performance of the hydrogen plant since we've added the carbon capture system. So we have operating experience to retrofit, build, execute, and continue to operate a carbon capture system. And we see a significant growth opportunity to deploy that same approach to other hydrogen plants we have around the world. Places in the world where the support for or the value of captured carbon is significant, we're looking for opportunities to retrofit our plants with carbon capture and really create, again, a positive project from a sustainability standpoint, while at the same time earning a good return for our shareholders on these projects. Hydrogen for mobility and energy, and I know we'll talk about this a lot. We are the world's leader in hydrogen today. We produce a lot of hydrogen. We transport hydrogen today via pipeline in trucks in both liquid and gas form. So we have a lot of expertise on hydrogen, and we're looking to continue to leverage that expertise going forward as the world gets even more excited about new opportunities for hydrogen. Just maybe on slide 20, quick comment on the one of the most exciting things, quite frankly, we've ever done. And it's mostly exciting because this is a new big project, not only for Air Products, not only for our industry, but really for the world. This is a project, and I'll talk about the specifics in a second, but it is really a game changer, a world-changing project. In our view, it has increased the confidence of people around the world in positions of making laws and regulations that there can be carbon-free hydrogen. And as importantly, people around the world who are contemplating converting to fuel cell electric vehicles. So a really, really exciting game-changing project. And on slide 21, you can see a little bit of what this is. It's a large production joint venture, about $5 billion of investment to start with wind, solar, and seawater and produce truly carbon-free hydrogen in NEOM in Saudi Arabia. And then an innovation to convert that to ammonia to make it easier to transport. And then Air Products will take all the output from this project, distribute that, dissociate it back into hydrogen, compress it, and dispense that into the market opportunities around the world. So again, production in Saudi Arabia, and then distributing that product around the world, primarily the bus and truck markets. So total Air Products investment of $3.7 billion, and very, very excited about really the advantage that we're going to have to bring this to the marketplace in 2025. On slide 22, those are not the only important parts of our overall ESG sustainability focus. Safety is very, very important to us. We start each earnings call with an update on our safety performance. I'll show this in the next slide, but we've created some new targets around diversity. We're very active in our communities. And again, we continue to focus on making our operations more efficient. As I mentioned on slide 23, you can see we rolled out shortly after September a goal around diversity and inclusion. And there's a specific set of two metrics here, one related to female management population, one related to minority management population. But this is really indicative of creating the culture that values inclusion. And it values inclusion of any type and every type. And whether this be our LGBTQ plus community, we want everybody that works at Air Products to be feel very, very included. We want to attract the best people in the broadest sense possible. We want them to feel included. So while that we are committed to this metric around female and minority, I don't want to give the impression that that's the only groups we care about. This is for everybody. So with that on slide 24, let me just wrap up. We're excited about our third by 30 metric around CO2 intensity, but we're really excited about the world's focus on sustainability and ESG, creating tremendous growth opportunities for Air Products. So with that, we'd be happy to talk about some questions and answers.
Thank you very much, Simon. That was a very interesting presentation and very comprehensive as well on where your business is positioning around sustainability. I think I will start with a question that is on everyone's mind. Given the current interest into this specific business, and this specific business, I mean hydrogen, where do you see hydrogen playing a role in the energy transition? And where do you see this taking off first? Is there a specific region which you think is best positioned than another? And what do you see in terms of potential future demand for blue versus green hydrogen, which has a very different implication for the industry?
Right. Great question, right? And exciting to talk about hydrogen. And again, just to remind us, we have a significant hydrogen business today. And again, that business has been driven by already the world's focus on sustainability. Regulatory frameworks that reduce the amount of sulfur allowable in diesel and gasoline transportation fuels around the world, that created the needs for the refiners to take more sulfur out of that's coming in with the crude oil, which created the hydrogen business. And so just really kind of pointing out that it's not like hydrogen all of a sudden is in the sustainability spotlight. It is certainly increased, but it's part of the business today. So as we look forward, quite frankly, we see market opportunities in all of these different opportunities for hydrogen. We do see for many, many years to come that there will continue to be demand for gray hydrogen. There is huge excitement, of course, about blue and green hydrogen, but we absolutely agree that this transition is going to take a significant period of time, and there will be demand for gray hydrogen for a long time to come. But really, gray and blue hydrogen aren't really two different things. If you think about a plant today that's producing gray hydrogen, we can come in and retrofit that plant with a carbon capture system, and now we're making blue hydrogen. So I think there is the opportunity for hydrogen that's being used today in the future to be coming from the same facility, but have a carbon capture system attached to that. Again, that's exactly what we did with the project I talked about in Port Arthur, Texas, and we're actively looking for opportunities to deploy that in projects around the world. So again, that might not be a new demand for hydrogen, but it may be an interest or a regulatory framework that says, I want to continue to take the hydrogen from this facility, but I'd like the carbon to be captured, and therefore turning a gray hydrogen facility into a blue hydrogen facility. And then I think there's the opportunity to deploy carbon capture in new facilities, new blue hydrogen facilities, where a certain segment of the market, I think, is going to say, you know, essentially, we're fine to have the hydrogen produced from hydrocarbons, but we really want to minimize the CO2 footprint. So if it's a natural gas-based steam methane reformer, as long as you put carbon capture on that, I'm happy to have that hydrogen supplied to me, or perhaps it gets turned into ammonia and we have so-called blue hydrogen or blue ammonia. So we see significant opportunities there. And then, of course, the carbon-free hydrogen, which is, you know, very, very exciting, but I think is going to take some time for a transition to happen here. You know, we talked a little bit about our NEOM project. That is a game changer in terms of the size, orders of magnitude bigger than anything anybody's done. But let me also put that in context for you and the audience. The hydrogen from NEOM can support about 20,000 city buses. So $7 billion, big project, orders of magnitude bigger, support about 20,000 city buses. Well, there's about 3 million city buses in the world. So We do. To be blunt, we don't need 10% of the market. We don't even need 1% of the market. So the point being, it's going to take some time for this transition to happen. And that's why we see good, strong growth opportunities in all of these areas.
Thank you very much. Yes, indeed, I think we are only at the starting point of this opportunity materializing for the industry. And I guess you talked about blue hydrogen and the fact that it's pretty easy from an industrial perspective, I guess, to retrofit an SMR facility with carbon capture. Mm-hmm. Would you maybe be able to take us through some of the cost elements around that? I guess we have had discussion with investors around the fact that carbon capture costs can vary significantly from one industrial facility to another. What makes SMR an easier process to decarbonize through carbon capture? And where do you see, I guess, maybe policy support around that?
Great. Well, let me first just make sure that we're grounded with what's Air Products' business position around this, right? Because obviously we produce a lot of this sure. hydrogen. It goes to clean up transportation fuels, but the chemistry creates the CO2. And with the exception of Port Arthur, that CO2 is released today. So I think it's really, really important for investors to appreciate, though, that in our on-site contracts, if there is a cost for the CO2, and I'll use the word cost, it may be a tax or a credit or whatever it may be. If there's a cost of that CO2, we pass that cost along to our customers. So I just want to make sure that we take the opportunity to help the investor community understand that Air Products does not have the downside risk for a CO2 tax being put in a regime where we have plants that would be passed along to our customers. So then let's talk about the opportunities. One of the reasons why we talk about CO2 capture from hydrogen plants or gasifiers being relatively easy is you don't have a CO2 stream that's mixed with a significant amount of nitrogen. So what I mean by that, if you take a normal combustion process and you're taking any kind of hydrocarbon and combusting it with air, you're going to end up with a lot of CO2, but the inert nitrogen will pass through and you'll have a very large volume of a CO2 and nitrogen mix. You can certainly separate those, but it's just more expensive to do that. And if we're looking at the back of a hydrogen plant on the process side or a gasifier, we have a much more concentrated stream of CO2. So that's why fundamentally we believe it's a relatively more economic thing to do. Now, maybe a couple of minutes on carbon capture, because we use the carbon capture, but it's really a question about what are you going to do about it? So we can capture the CO2 off the back of the plant. And as we talk about, okay, then what? What are you going to do with the CO2? And we would say today, there's really a couple of different options. One of the options is to use the CO2 for enhanced oil recovery. And that's what happens at the project that I mentioned in Port Arthur, Texas. We sell the CO2 to another party who uses it in their CO2 pipeline for enhanced oil recovery. Well, to be honest with you, that's a great solution, but you have to be located in a part of the world where there's a CO2 used for enhanced oil recovery, and that's not everywhere. So if you have that, that's a great opportunity. If you don't have that, you can sequester the CO2, which is a fancy word for digging a hole in the ground in the right place, in the right geological formation, and injecting the CO2. And there are many places in the world where that's a very good solution. But you asked about the cost, and you can appreciate in the two things I just mentioned, in one case, perhaps I can just connect up to an existing CO2 line and create some value in that CO2. In the other case, I'm going to have to run a project and I'm going to have to, you know, invest in the ability to put the CO2 in the ground. And that's one of the reasons why there's a significant variety in, let's say, the costs of a carbon capture system. It's really more about the what are you going to do with the CO2. Now, I do want to mention, you know, essentially a bucket of opportunities, the third thing, which a lot of people are very focused on, including Air Products, which is the ability to do something productive with the CO2. So the two previous examples I mentioned, really, you're putting the CO2 back in the ground is what you're doing. But if we could take that CO2 and we could do something with it from a chemical standpoint and perhaps create syngas out of it and create a productive element, more chemistry around it, that would be a very, very good solution. We're working very hard on that. Others are working very hard on that. In our view today, there isn't a technology that's ready for world scale deployment in that area, but that's certainly something that people should keep an eye on going forward. And maybe just one comment about, you know, there's a lot. I think you asked about where is this most interesting. You know, I would say everywhere there's some level of interest, but obviously different regions, countries, states, provinces have put in or are in different stages of putting in frameworks. And as you know, it's a long way from an overall government statement of intent to specific rules and regulations that support project investment. But we do see there's places in the world today where we think the framework is in place to support carbon capture projects, and we're actively working on those opportunities, and hopefully we'll be in a position to announce a project at some point.
Thank you very much. I think we'll be looking forward to hearing more about that specific topic. I think one of the next questions I would like to ask you is around the challenges that surround hydrogen transportation. I think you showed one of the slides around the NEOM project. What is your view on that? Which kind of, in which form is hydrogen least costly to transport? And do you actually think that, for example, ammonia will play a significant role, or are there other types of hydrogen form that could be transported easily?
Yep, great question. So let me just talk about what we do today. I mean, we transport hydrogen every day. Today, right now, we're transporting hydrogen as a gas through pipelines. We have the world's largest pipeline network in the U.S. Gulf Coast. We're also putting gaseous hydrogen in trucks, compressed, you know, large cylinders, if you will, on the back of trucks, and using that as a transport mechanism for hydrogen. But we also have a number of liquid hydrogen plants around the world where we take gaseous hydrogen, we cool it down and liquefy that, put it in insulated vessels and deliver that to customers. So I share that with you to communicate that we do understand how to do those things. We do them every day. But to be honest with you, it comes down to the very nature of hydrogen. It's a very light molecule. And when it's cold, it's very cold. When you need to turn it into a liquid, it's very cold. So if you, for example, want to transport hydrogen long distances, pipelines are really not economical for a very long distance. You could transport it as a gas, but when you compress it as a gas and put it in heavy metal containers, that makes your distribution cost quite high. That would be the appropriate solution for relatively short distances. Similarly, you can turn the hydrogen into a liquid, but it takes a lot of energy to do that. And you also then have a very, very cold liquid that is going to heat up and boil off a little bit as you transport it. So one of the things that we decided to do with the NEOM project, I think a very innovative approach, is to say, okay, I have this carbon-free hydrogen, and I've produced this carbon-free hydrogen in Saudi Arabia, but the market is elsewhere. I need to get this carbon-free hydrogen molecule to the places where it's going to be needed, perhaps a city bus fleet somewhere in the world. Well, I could move it as hydrogen, but as I just said, that's relatively costly. We're going to turn that hydrogen into ammonia. It maintains the carbon-free nature of it, and it's much easier to transport ammonia around the world. It's not as cold. There are already today, ammonia is transported around the world for other uses, so you can leverage some of that supply infrastructure. And then you take that ammonia and essentially dissociate it or crack it or break it back apart near or at the point of use, and that's how you create the hydrogen. So again, the molecule that's coming out of the NEOM project is ammonia, but we really just think of ammonia as a carrier to make a more effective way of transporting the hydrogen. So we thought, honestly, very long and hard about the right solution for the NEOM project. So we do see ammonia playing a role, but in this case, it's not ammonia as ammonia, it's ammonia as a transport mechanism for the hydrogen. So to answer your question is, we obviously thought that was the right answer for the NEOM project, and we would expect that that'll be a good solution for other projects into the future as well.
Thank you very much. I think this is very clear. Let me just pause there and remind the audience that they can ask us questions through the website. There's a slight delay, I think, with the server, but some of them will be channeled to me through email. And we already have one question from investors at Mercator Asset Management. And the question is the following. You have focused and deployed large sums of capital into gasification and coal to gas capacity. How does this measure up from a sustainability standpoint?
Great question. And the answer is very, very well. Let me expand on that a little bit. You know, when we talk about sustainability and ESG, we have to remember that there's the S and the G as well as the E, right? So there's a social component and a governance component to this in addition to environmental. So as we look at gasification market opportunities around the world, the reason that quite frankly, countries are focused on gasification is it's a way to utilize the natural resources some of these countries have and to use it in a much more environmentally friendly way. So if we look at countries like China, like Indonesia, where we've announced a project, India, we've not announced a project, but Prime Minister Modi has talked about gasification. It's an opportunity for those countries to use the coal resources that they have and create products that, quite frankly, improve the quality of life in those countries. They minimize their dependence on foreign sources of energy or chemicals. They reduce their need to use their financial resources to import items. And so there's a overall holistic benefit to the society. That's why those countries are interested in using gasification. Now, at the same time, you look at, okay, there's coal in those countries. When you compare gasification to burning the coal, it's very, very positive environmentally to use gasification. The particulate, which is literally the things that make your eyes water in a polluted environment, the sulfur containing, the nitrogen, the SOx and the NOx, very, very diminished impact from gasification. So absolutely more environmentally friendly than burning the coal. Now, of course, gasification creates CO2. The chemistry is the chemistry. But as we talked about, gasification is very capture ready. The CO2 stream off a gasifier, quite frankly, is actually easier to capture than it is off of a hydrogen plant. So to the extent that at some point the gasification projects are in a location where the framework supports capturing the carbon, we think that there's a very, very strong element there. So again, in summary, we do see this as a positive, particularly under the broadest parameter of sustainability, ESG, improving the lives of folks in these countries, fundamentally a much more environmentally friendly way to use the coal, even today, and then with the very strong potential to retrofit carbon capture systems. And then I guess finally, I'd say that we're proud and honored that we've been chosen to be part of these projects. And one of the reasons we've been chosen to be part of these projects is Air Products' involvement, in our humble opinion, makes these projects better. We are able to execute these very, very large projects from an efficient standpoint from the use of capital. We're able to operate them very, very efficiently. So we do believe that our being involved in the projects is beneficial overall.
Thank you very much. It's indeed a very clear answer. I think that the debate is extremely large in a sense that as of today, we don't have, I would say, region-specific decarbonization scenario or even wider sustainability scenario that allow investors to actually balance the social, the environmental benefits and negative impacts. We are starting to see this developing with some of the tools that Europe is working on. I think Europe recently announced that they want to work with the US to have a common sustainable finance tool. And I believe that for investors, there will be more elements and tools available to guide them through the assessment of sustainability. And that's what we work on within JP. My next question is pretty much on the NEOM project. You mentioned it. That's a first of its kind project. That's a massive also project with $5 billion invested. Could you maybe just take us through again this slide where you mentioned your involvement in the NEOM project? Mm-hmm. And how the business opportunity is structured. I guess you've seen some of our publication from the analysts covering Air Products in the US about what kind of hydrogen cost at the end is expected for this project to deliver on the return on capital that is aligned with the historical return on capital that you mentioned on the slide. So maybe could you first take us through what's your involvement, air separation unit and the rest, and give us a sense of whether you think that that can be replicated elsewhere in the world as well.
Great. So a lot there. If I don't hit everything, make sure we come back to it. So good question. So again, if we think about the NEOM project, I think it's most helpful to think about it in two parts. One is the production venture. And the reason is, first of all, that's a three-way production joint venture: ourselves, our partner Aqua Power, and then actually NEOM itself, which is the Saudi government, the city there. So each of those partners will own one third of the production joint venture, capital approximately $5 billion. So roughly speaking, about $1.7 billion of investment. So to be clear, the joint venture will own all of the assets, but obviously within that group of people, there's different areas of expertise. Obviously, Air Products is going to do the air separation plants. Our partner, Aqua Power, has a lot of experience with power project development in the Middle East, so has some expertise around the wind and solar, for example. But again, the project starts with wind and solar to create carbon-free electricity. It uses electrolyzer, and we have a relationship with ThyssenKrupp to support that electrolyzer technology. So we take, by the way, it's seawater that gets desalinated. So take the water, the carbon-free electricity, electrolyzer to produce carbon-free hydrogen. And then, of course, there's an Air Products air separation plant producing nitrogen. And you take the carbon-free hydrogen, carbon-free nitrogen together, make the ammonia with our relationship with Haldor Topsoe for that technology. And then that is what leaves that project is carbon-free hydrogen in the form of ammonia. So that project, again, about $5 billion, Air Products takes all of the output of that project. So that project itself has a pre-signed off-taker of all of its output at a known price. So that has a certain return, assuming the project can be executed for what we believe it can be, and we have a high level of confidence in that. So then when we turn to kind of the downstream now, so Air Products takes all of the ammonia, the carbon-free hydrogen in the form of ammonia, and is responsible to take that downstream. And that's where we're incredibly excited. I have to say that, of course, our board and our team, prior to announcing this project, making the decision to go ahead with it, we're very, very excited. But I don't need to tell anybody on the call today that the world's interest in this area has gone up dramatically in the last 9 months. And again, we think in part it's because this project demonstrates to people that this is real. So again, we'll be looking for market opportunities to provide this carbon-free hydrogen. We think bus fleets, city bus fleets is a great opportunity, truck fleets. Obviously, there's the potential for, even in the transportation space, for carbon-free hydrogen to support trains and ships and perhaps even airplanes and even opportunities beyond that. So Air Products is very excited about the position that we're going to have this carbon-free hydrogen in 2025 in significant quantities, much more than, you know, there is today or other projects are planned. And again, just to frame again the size of the project, it has enough hydrogen to support about 20,000 city buses. Our humble opinion is that there is going to be much, much more demand for carbon-free hydrogen by 2025 than that is contained in 20,000 city buses. So we are excited about the potential for this project to contribute to this evolution of the world. But also, quite frankly, from an investor standpoint, we're excited about having carbon-free hydrogen molecules in 2025 when we think the world will have a high level of demand for them. So.
Thank you very much. Indeed, I think the question of future demand is extremely important in that regard. And that's where we came to the conclusions in our report that basically there will be regional differences. And I guess there are countries and regions that have announced very clear hydrogen strategies. And you're right to highlight that 2020 has been a quite unique year in that regard, with 9 countries, one region announcing it. If you compare it to last three years, it was only 5 countries. And we see Europe positioning on the electrolyzer industry with 40 gigawatts announced installed capacity by 2030. We see Australia, which wants to become an export hub. And where do you see Saudi Arabia in that? Because from a policy standpoint, I think there have not been many announcements made, but obviously it's well positioned with NEOM and I guess other projects. So do you expect this to, like any announcement to be made in Saudi Arabia with regards to green hydrogen?
Well, obviously the world's largest project, right, is exporting green hydrogen from Saudi around the world, right? And I think, you know, again, I don't need to tell you or anybody else that there's a lot of announcements out right now. And I think one of the challenges for everybody is to kind of sort out what's real and not real. So our project is very real. Our boards have approved it. We're full speed ahead. And so I think that's something investors need to keep in mind. But let's step back for a second. Why are we doing this project in Saudi? To be honest with you, it's not because it's Saudi. It's the fundamental economics of the project, which are driven by, as I say, this sounds incredibly simplistic, but the sun shines and the wind blows. And in that corner of Saudi Arabia, we spent a lot of time thinking about the best place to do that. Obviously, a lot of the costs associated with these projects is generating the carbon-free electricity. And so if you have essentially higher quality or more sunshine and you have more wind, you can leverage your investment in the solar field and the wind farm. So that's why we chose to do the project there. Now, we have a great relationship with entities in Saudi. We're very comfortable with doing business there, but it wasn't so much a, hey, let's do a project in Saudi. It was, hey, where in the world can we make this project be very, very economical? So we would never suggest that Saudi is the only place in the world to do this. What I would also observe, and you see some of this, is there's a lot of places, we happen to be headquartered in Pennsylvania in the United States. You know, you could build a green hydrogen facility in Pennsylvania, but I can assure you the sun doesn't shine very much. And so it's not going to be very, very efficient. So if Pennsylvania wants carbon-free hydrogen, in our opinion, it's going to be more efficient to have that made somewhere else in the world and brought in. And obviously, there's a significant portion of Europe that would probably be in that same category. But let me also say that we've talked about the relative size of the market opportunity. There is going to have to be many projects. And so I don't think we would ever want to suggest that we're the only one that's going to do these or that, you know, there's not going to be competition. There has to be competition. For the world to adopt hydrogen in the way that we believe, and I think many people believe is going to happen, and quite frankly, is being mandated by governments, there's going to need to be quite a few projects in different places around the world. So we would expect to see other projects happen as well. And I think you can also see recently, I think Germany recognized that they're going to very much need to import carbon-free hydrogen. It would be difficult to produce all that economically in Germany. So again, just a recent example that supports this idea that what we need to do is make this where it makes the most economic sense and then deliver it to where the market demand is.
Thank you very much. No, I think it's indeed a very important point. There will be country which will be more exporter, some which will be more importer of green hydrogen, and some of them will be positioning on the end-use technologies and get the added value from there. That's a very fair point. I think that's very interesting, and I think that will be, unless we have a last investor question, my last question to you. And I think thank you very much for being on our conference and making this great presentation about Air Products sustainability positioning and the hydrogen opportunity. We look forward to keep working with you and keep exchanging on this very interesting topic, which is only starting at the moment, I think.
Well, again, let me say thank you very much to yourself, the rest of the team, and JP Morgan for allowing us to come to your ESG conference virtually. I hope in the future we can get together non-virtually live and do this again. But with that, thank you very much. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you.